Hello and welcome, Nationals fans, to the Dogcast, the podcast more exciting than pre-season football. I'm your host, Blake Finney, and I'm suffering from Chicago deep dish pizza withdrawal symptoms, just in case you missed my spam-type posts on my Twitter. Joining me this week is one of our contributors here at District on Deck. Yet again, we've got Brian Foley back on. How are you doing, Brian?
Thanks for having. And as a Milwaukee resident right now, I gotta hate on your Chicago deep dish pizza, just as the little brother syndrome that we have up here. So,
no, I don't know. I was really looking forward to the deep dish. I went to some chain, I can't remember what it was called, and I ordered a personal pizza because I wasn't that hungry, and I was kind of disappointed by how small it was. I was expecting like a great big thing.
Well, usually they're thick enough to make up for it, no matter how small they are in diameter.
That's true. I was definitely very full, but unfortunately, this isn't a pizza podcast. It's a podcast. So first off, we're going to recap the Cardinals series. Obviously, it didn't get off to a great start with the walk-off loss after the devastating walk-off loss in Chicago that I was at and still haven't quite got over. But we did end today with a nice one-run win. Bullpen locked it down in the end. So what are your takeaways from this series? Obviously, being at 500 still isn't really ideal.
Takeaways are nothing has changed, really. Just treading water. They're running out of time. Today, good to see another solid, at least Tanner Roark start. Good offense for the first half of the game. Kind of slowed down late, but offense really hasn't been too much of an issue since the All-Star break. But, you know, they didn't do what they needed to do in the series. They needed to probably take at least three or four, make up some ground in the wild card, and then also hopefully potentially try and pick up some games on either the Braves or the Phillies. Instead, losing ground right and left, salvage it a little bit today with a win, but in the end, not doing enough. And unless they go on a major run, like starting now, it's looking dire.
Yeah, it's it would have been interesting to see how the season had played out had the Nats come out with that win on Sunday in Chicago. Obviously, we didn't have a podcast. I was too busy held up at Chicago O'Hare Airport. But it would have been interesting because you feel like maybe they would have been able to come out with that win on Monday had they not just been completely deflated by that on Sunday.
Well, in that Cubs series, I mean, they let the first game slip away. They pull out game two, then obviously just blow the third game on Sunday. But I saw Mark Zuckerman tweeting like 10:15 on Sunday night, they were a game or an out away from being 4.5 down in division. And then last night they were down, 9.5 by the end of the third St. Louis game. Obviously win today, make up a little ground. But I mean, things can flip in an instant. The Braves are playing well. And so they really just kind of they lost the season in the last 5 days.
Yeah, it was those three games, the two walk-offs, and then just the miserable games on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I guess a theme in this series was kind of a bit of too little, too late offense. There was a lot of late scoring in the games when the game already seemed lost. Obviously, that wasn't the case on Monday. But who stood out to you on the offensive side of the ball?
Offense, well, it's good to be talking. Another good game for Harper today, 3-for-5. So it's good to be, and he's been great for the last month, really, since the All-Star break. So it's good to see him. But, I mean, I kind of want to talk a little bit on the negative side. Adam Eaton at the top of the order is just not getting it done. I mean, not so great series this week against St. Louis. But it's stretching back since July 25th. He's 11-for-61, only two extra base hits. I mean, he's got, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago. He's got absolutely no pop in the bat right now. So he's really singles or bust. And for the last 2-3 weeks, he's been bust. And so then he really has absolutely no value. And so to keep just running him out there at the leadoff spot is killing them. To keep running him out really in general, I mean, Taylor's not like super consistent either, but at least he's a defensive stud, has some value that you know you can count on. So it's kind of been disappointing to see him really kind of hit the skids in the last month.
Yeah, do you wonder if it's kind of some of the fatigue? Obviously, he only played, half a month last season, and he's got to build himself back up, and maybe it's part of that. I think when I watch him swing lately, it feels like he's peeling off way too early. So he's starting to go through his swing, but as the ball kind of gets towards the plate, he starts to lean back, and he's missing out on some balls like that where he would knock it the other way.
Right. He's kind of getting a little flaily with the swing and no power off the back leg. So even if he hits the ball like hard, it's not going anywhere. It's like he's hitting with a noodle bat. And I could see it being fatigue. I mean, he did come back like off the DL. He came off pretty strong. So I could see, and he kind of runs like a little gimpy, and I don't remember him. I haven't seen him enough, like non-injured, to like remember if he like ran like that when he was back in Chicago, but he kind of looks like he's not running entirely smoothly. And I don't know if it's just his style or if it's his leg is still bothering him a bit, or if he's kind of just nervous about it. So it's kind of, you don't want to give up on him. He's a really solid player back in his prime with Chicago, but maybe an off season will do him well, but maybe we've kind of seen the best of Eaton, and it wasn't in a Nats uniform.
Yeah, I think he always ran with like his shoulders up and ran.
Well, he's the Mighty Mouse, so.
But yeah, he has, I don't know, he still hustles at 100%, so.
That's not an issue, but.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's mainly down to fatigue, maybe. When did he come back? He came back at the start of July, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think they should move him down in the lineup or play Taylor more? Or what do you think the solution is? Or just let him grind it out?
I wouldn't mind seeing him move down. I guess it depends whether you're still going for it. Because if you still believe that they're going to do something in the playoff race, obviously, a lot of people don't now, especially with the way this series has gone. But if you are trying to see what you've got for the future, I'll put Trey Turner in the leadoff spot. He's obviously not doing fantastic, but I think you're going to gain more long term by putting him up there than Adam Eaton.
No, I agree with that. And I think Turner, I think, is probably a better leadoff hitter anyways. And Eaton, I mean, I would just kind of let him maybe move back to like the seventh spot or something there in the lineup. Let him see if he can figure it out. And hey, if he turns it back on, you want to move him back to up to the top of the lineup. That's fine too. I don't really mind him at the top, but right now he's just not cutting it.
Yeah, exactly. And potentially long term, you like Juan Soto in the two spot, preferably. That's right. That's where all the stat geeks, as I can't remember the word that Jason Worth used. that's where they say to put your best hitter, and then maybe Rendon three, and let it pan out kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean Turner, Soto, Rendon, Harper. And then Zimmerman, Murphy. I mean, I know like next year, like some of those guys might not still be there, but down the stretch here, that's a pretty formidable top six.
Yeah, definitely. One guy that's kind of gone under the radar and that I wrote a little bit about is Matt Wieters, who swung it pretty well. Come up with some big RBI hits late in the series. He was only 3 for 11, but he's putting the ball in play a lot more. He's not striking out as much as he was previously. And this is exactly what I wrote about before, or to start the season. He had his bat way up on his shoulders. He was like rocking it backwards and the bat was facing down. But now he's kind of brought his hands down and he seems a lot quicker to the ball. Have you noticed that improvement as well?
Yeah, sometimes when he gets in trouble, he has a really long swing and it looks like he has absolutely no shot of catching up to any sort of fastball, whether it's 100 or 90 miles an hour. But now, yeah, I think you're right. A little quicker to the ball, a little more decisive at the plate, and just making more contact. I mean, it obviously it's just going to do wonders for you. I mean, he's not a guy who you're really expecting a lot of out of anyways.
Yeah, I don't think you're not that bothered how he does. I don't think he's going to come back, and he may even struggle to get a major league deal in the offseason, but better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and he's had a good couple weeks, so I mean, that's nice.
Yeah, and as the catcher, you don't need him to hit 300. If he hits 250, then you're pretty happy.
Yeah, he's not quite there yet, but he's been like that in August, which they need every they can't afford right now to have like seven hitting spots, or I guess six with Eaton struggling. They need everyone firing on all cylinders to have any hope whatsoever.
Mm. One of the interesting points was the Nats starting pitching, which had actually started to be a lot better lately. Had a bit of a rough go. Even the best start from a starter came today with Tanner Rark doing the minimum for a quality start. Combined, they went 18 2/3, 23 hits, 12 earned, 9 walks, and only 6 strikeouts in those. What are you making of the rotation? It feels like they're waiting for the cavalry to come back, because you got Fedi, Joe Ross, Strasburg all starting their, well, Ross is a little way in, but Fedi and Strasburg about to start their rehab assignment.
Right, and Strasburg, it kind of sounds like he might be back on Tuesday if his bullpen session goes well coming up. So he might be back in the rotation soon. Otherwise, the rest of the rotation besides Scherzer, Roark has been solid recently, but Gio Gonzalez, and we'll talk about him a little bit later because he's pitching in this Miami series. Can't really count on him for anything right now. And Gio has always been a little hit or miss, but right now he is a lot of miss, and it's really causing them issues because they need him to be like he was the first half of the season and last year, where he's like a top 10, 15 pitcher in the National League. They need him to be at least like solid, preferably very good, but he just can't get it together right now against like formidable lineups.
Yeah, he's been having very hit and miss starts, and obviously the Marlins is a favorable draw for him, but after that you've had Roark, who's turned on the Jets basically. Helixson has been probably the most consistent pitch. You know you're going to get 5 innings of 2-run ball from him.
He's been very consistent. With this bullpen, though, it really kind of puts Martinez in a tough spot.
Mm. On the note of the bullpen, we saw a lot of turnover. So Solis was demoted, Ryan Madsen with the DL, Tim Collins and Trevor Gott coming back up. This kind of touches on your piece. With the Nationals' inability to develop their pitches, and it kind of comes to the fore. So if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I touched on it earlier this week. It's kind of been an organizational failure just across the board, where they haven't really developed enough pitching in the minor leagues. And it hasn't been for lack of trying. A lot of their top prospects have been pitchers. Giolito, Fedi, Lopez, those guys haven't really panned out either with the Nats or with other organizations in the starting rotation. I mean, maybe eventually, like Giolito, maybe he turns into a lockdown reliever at some point, and he could have done that for the Nats. Maybe it happens for Fedi, where they're just not cut out for the starting rotation. But then the guys they've brought up in the bullpen, they haven't really fared well either. Kota Glover was deemed as kind of maybe a closer in waiting when he first appeared in the major leagues. He's shown flashes, but he's just been inconsistent. Doesn't really throw enough strikes. Even when he's pitching well, stuff moves all over the place. And then the couple guys that have actually turned into like decent relievers, they've been traded away. And it wasn't even like Trinan, Felipe, Rivero, now Vasquez. It wasn't even they weren't bad trades. I mean, they didn't work out for the Nationals. Getting Doolittle was a good deal from Oakland. Melanson for, you traded got Melanson for a couple months, and so that looks bad in hindsight, but Melanson pitched well for the Nationals. The real problem is they did these win now moves and they didn't win. And so now it looks bad, and they're at the end of like every team goes to these 5-6 year cycles where you're winning, you make these win now moves, and it's worth it if you get to the World Series, win a World Series, and the Nationals just didn't do it. And now they're looking back and they're saying, oh man, we don't have any, all these other teams seem to have young studs coming up and making a difference, making an impact in these postseason races, and the Nationals have nothing, and they're picking up guys like Greg Holland and just not getting the job done, and now they've got injuries and they've been totally exposed.
Yeah, I think it's shown more in the rotation, so when the injuries have piled up, so when Strasburg's been down, Helixson on the DL, you've had the call on Fedi, who has had his moment. Kind of, he's still got to work on getting that strikeout pitch, which is the main thing we didn't see from him. We had Austin Voth up for one start, and he was supposed to be the more complete pitcher out of him and Jeffrey Rodriguez, who I'll mention in a bit. But again, he struggled against the Mets, and we've seen the Mets line up this year that can't even buy Jacob deGrom a win. And then finally, Rodriguez, who he has 2 major league pitches, and he might be someone who they actually end up putting in the bullpen. But when if it really got stretched and you needed three or four starters, then you can understand them calling up people who aren't quite ready. But when it's only one or two, you really need someone who can fill the hole.
Right. I mean, they came into the season with four starters because they had AJ Cole in their starting rotation to begin the year. So, I mean, they were really kind of banking on perfect health. And obviously with a guy like Strasburg in your rotation, yeah, you can't count on that really. And I mean, he's gotten hurt and it's come back to bite him. Guys in the back of their bullpen have come back to bite him. They've had plenty of injuries back there, trading guys away who honestly, I don't really care that they've traded Kinsler and Kelly away, but you know, it just further weakens like an already suspect group. And now that's really, really hurting them with, what are they, 12 and 21 in one run games?
Yeah, it's something like that. But yeah, I don't think those hurt them in those close late inning games, because people keep saying, oh, they wouldn't have blown that lead against the Cubs had they had Kinsler and Kelly. But who else would you have put in? You have Glover and Madsen going. You might have had Kinsler in the eighth, but he wasn't the one who put it.
In that game, Kinsler gave up two runs against the Nationals, so yeah. He's not exactly a lockdown guy either.
Yeah, you wouldn't have put him in the ninth over Madsen at that point, who was actually pitching quite well, and that's a completely different topic about what Madsen should have done there. Mm. But yeah, it's the developing, because you see the likes of the Yankees who constantly bring up these flame throwing. flame-throwing relievers who just make their bullpen more dominant. It's not a sustainable strategy to go and invest huge amounts of millions into the bullpen.
Right. The way to get relievers is just to get a ton of young guys and see what works. And the kind of the Dodgers have gone the other way. They just get a ton of young starting pitchers and then put them in the bullpen. I mean, they have like 8 or 9 starters. They had some injury issues, and so they were still able to field the quality rotation. Now all those guys are healthy, and they're putting guys like Ross Stripling, who actually just went on the DL, and Kenta Maeda in the bullpen. Like, these are like real quality major league arms that they just have so many growing on trees that they can just afford to put them in the pen, maybe get a couple innings out of them, which really helps the rest of their bullpen. And so they should honestly be fine in their bullpen, even without Kenley Jansen for the next couple weeks. And yeah, the Nationals... completely different situation.
Yeah, I think the phrase goes, throw enough expletive at the wall and something will stick.
Yeah, basically.
We'll look ahead to the National Series with the Marlins. They're back to their awful selves. They've got the worst ERA in the National League, and they're 2-14 in their last 16 games. So against the Atlanta Braves... So in game one, they dropped the first one. Tuki Toussaint had to practice that one. Dominated the Marlins in the first game of the doubleheader in a 9-1 loss. Mike Foltynewicz also dominated them in the nightcap. Bit of a rough one. Ronald Acuna Jr. became the youngest player ever to hit a home run in 5 straight games in a 10-6 loss for the Marlins. And the Braves completed the sweep. The main talking point in that one was Jose Urania plunking Acuna with the first pitch. So what did you make of that whole ordeal and the subsequent 6-game suspension?
Well, a couple of things. Don't throw a guy just because he's hitting home runs off you. 2, that's a pretty weak suspension from Major League Baseball, just about 1 start. 3, on the other end of the spectrum, baseball Twitter just collectively freaking out and losing their minds. Like, it's like an affront on American like livelihood. Like, all right, calm down. Like that, like we're going a little bit over the edge there. I mean, plenty of articles just absolutely losing their minds. And I'm not supporting this, and like the stupid unwritten rules, they're ridiculous, but like, it's just a stupid baseball game, and it's very lucky. It would have been worse. So it's very lucky that Acuna did not get hurt. So that's the one positive out of all of this. He stayed healthy, played today. I got at least one hit, I know. So,
yeah, I don't think he led off with a home run, but
I think he led off with a single.
it was certainly bizarre, and I think I watched it and it looked intentional, but I don't know. It was kind of on the borderline. I couldn't say for 100% certainty that it was, but I think he came out after the game and was just saying, I'm trying to get him inside, and gave it the old company line. But yeah, I think six game is light, given that he's a starter. If it's a position player, you wouldn't see the position player suspended for one game.
Right. That's always a ridiculous part. If they would suspend him for 5 games, like which they would do for like a position player type thing. I mean, I don't know if you can suspend a pitcher for 5 starts, but at least for like 15 days is probably more equivalent.
Yeah, I think so, something like 10 to 15 to get a couple starts. But yeah, it's silly. He didn't do anything out of order on any of the home runs at any point. And the most bizarre part was Keith Hernandez on the Mets broadcast saying he'd hit 3 home runs in a row. You've got to punk him. What?
I did not get that at all. I didn't understand that. And especially, he's a hitter. So, like, you think he would be standing up for Acuna there. So that didn't really make any sense to me.
Yeah, he didn't even come out for, oh, yeah, he celebrated too extravagantly. He just plain and simple said, he's done really well. You've got to hit him.
It was the most ridiculous thing ever. I'm surprised Mike Trout doesn't lead the league in hit by pitches, if that's the case.
Oh, people are going to have a treat with Victor Robles, but that's a completely different story. which players are you watching out for on the Marlins? Obviously not Jose Urena.
Yeah. So I was looking just at their FanGraphs page, just collectively their roster, and I was like, this is a crew. This is a crew and a half. I didn't feel like I could say JT Realmuto because, you know, people know who he is. So I'm just going to go with Brian Anderson. Just a nice, solid player, having a good rookie season. Leads National League rookies in doubles, 115 OPS plus. Play a couple positions, bats all over the lineup, and he's been a little bit slumping, a little bit of a slump the last week and a half or so. 5 for 33 in the last 9 games, but for most of the summer, he was raking at a pretty nice clip. So he's a good, solid player, someone that maybe the Marlins can build around as kind of like a quasi. Quasi like complimentary piece, or potentially even use as like trade bait or something. He's kind of a expendable player, but a nice one to have.
Yeah, he's someone you could put anywhere in the lineup, and he would do a good job.
Right,
and then fill him in where you've got the need at the time. If your lineup shallow at the time, put him in third. If you're starting to get some of those rebuilding pieces up, you can put him further down, like 5 or 6, and he would still do a good job there.
Yeah, no, he's a quality player. I don't think he's going to be haunting the Nats for the next decade in the NL East, but he's definitely a guy who can win some games for the Marlins, which maybe they want to do eventually. I don't know if that's Jeter's plan or not.
I had to go digging around because I also didn't want to say JT Realmuto, and I've gone with Rafael Ortega, who
I don't even know who that is.
He's hitting 286, got a 355 OBP and 4 stolen bases in 6 games to his call up. We're scraping the barrel of it.
I don't feel as bad now.
He's the only hitter hitting above 262 for the Marlins in the last 30 days. So remember to keep an eye on Rafael Ortega, who I can't say I would have heard of before this season.
All right. Well, good to know. And we'll see if he haunts the Nationals for the next
I did have one other. I had Drew Steckenrider, who people may have actually heard of and seen earlier this season. I think he's fired a couple scoreless innings, but Carl Bearclaw, who was the previous closer, now on the 10-day DL. Steckenrider isn't quite a typical closer. He's only got just above 9K per 9, 3.29 ERA, and makes you feel a bit better about the Nats bullpen.
Hey, we'd still take him, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But if that's the closer, I don't want to see the... Well, I do want to see
I don't know. Glover is closing today. His ERA isn't sparkling.
So which Nats are you keeping an eye on this series?
There's a host of Nationals who I've kind of jotted down. I'll just kind of run through a couple quickly. Daniel Murphy hitting really well. That's fun. It's fun to have a good hitting Murphy back. Because before, when he first came back, it was kind of sad. He was kind of gimping around a little bit, showing really no burst, but kind of getting his legs under him, now hitting 382, I believe, if my math is correct, since July 8th. So a good over a month now, really raking, slowly getting some more power. And then I guess one other person would be, we talked about Acuna earlier, so kind of bringing it to Juan Soto. Soto still getting some walks, but since August 5th, he's now hitting six for his last 36. Average is down, and now him and Acuna basically have almost identical stat lines kind of across the board. A little more power for Acuna, but more patience for Soto, obviously. So I guess as we have like six more weeks in the left in the season, what are you looking at for the rookie of the year race? Like, who do you think, do you still think Soto has the edge?
I think Soto has the edge because he's played just a bit more at the moment, I think.
A little bit, yeah, a few more games.
And I think kind of he's stolen the show in the summer, and he's got that. He's probably got more, I don't know if wow factor is the right word, but he's kind of more ingrained in people's minds because he's been doing it all summer. Whereas Acuna's kind of been missing for a few weeks with that injury. So, and again,
Acuna could definitely, I agree with you that Soto has the edge now, even if in this little mini slump, but Acuna could definitely steal it because he's really in the heart of a pennant race right now. And he's playing well. So if he goes on a tear and Soto kind of like Nats finished with 84 wins and Soto's hitting like kind of how he is right now, like Kitts finishes the same batting line, I could see Acuna swiping in and stealing that award.
They just showed Acuna on SportsCenter hitting that leadoff single with an elbow guard this time. I think potentially this little fiasco and his success of late has kind of won the non-stats part of the vote.
Yeah, I think it's definitely putting him back on the front page. So he definitely is kind of more in people's mind now than Soto is, at least.
And for me, I'm looking at the hits to bust out of a slump. So like you said, Soto, 143 average in his last nine games. Still got the six walks to eight strikeouts, so he's still getting on base at a good clip. And then Adam Eaton, 180 in his last 19 games. And those strikeouts have soared. So I think Australian Pablo Lopez probably both going to start. Would you give Soto or Eaton a day off against the lefty on Saturday?
I was looking at the game today, and I'm like, wow, Soto could really use a day off. But then I'm like, whoa, Eaton really needs a day off. So I would give Eaton a day off. Even when Soto's not hitting, he still has some value. I mean, he draws a lot of pitches, gets some walks, and hey, he gets a hold of one pitch. I mean, he can still turn on it and make something happen much more than Eaton can at the plate. So I would still give Soto a little more time, but if another struggling weekend, I would definitely sit him down for a day, just get his legs back underneath him.
I think he's hitting better against left-handers than right. He's hitting for more power against left-handers, so
yeah,
it's kind of the right and we go for the Matt Adams adventure in left field for a day.
Well, speaking of Adams, he can't hit right now either. He's 0 for his last 17, I think, and 2 for his last 29. So, I mean, if he's not hitting, he can't play. Do you think this is kind of like the numbers correcting on him? He's always been a good hitter, but he was not as good of a hitter as he showed for the first three and a half, four months of the year.
I wonder if it's some of the inconsistent playing time, because he was locked in against righties, but now that Zimmerman's hitting well and people want to get it, you want to get him a lot of playing time. And I think David Martinez has been keen that when a right-hander's kind of had neutral or reverse splits, he's tried to get Zimmerman in the lineup rather than Adams. So I wonder if some of that inconsistent playing time is coming into it.
No, I would buy that. And so that means like if he is facing a righty, he's facing a tough righty, which obviously not going to help your numbers. And it is hard to, because Zimmerman is hitting well. He's been on a tear, not much tonight, but otherwise he has been hitting lights out since coming back. So, and he's a franchise like legend centerpiece, and obviously he was an all-star last year, so you want to squeeze him in as much as can. But kind of unfair to Adams, just a tough break, because after what he did for the first half of the season, maybe the team's MVP for the first half, I mean, it's kind of disappointing to see him struggle down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're going to look ahead to each matchup individually. First up on Friday at 7:05 p.m., we've got Max Scherzer against Dan Straley. Max Scherzer 15-5 with a 2.19 ERA. Dan Straley 4-5 with a 4.42 ERA. Max Scherzer in his last two starts, 14 innings, 7 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 17 strikeouts, and the Mets have lost both.
Oh, that was fun until the end.
It's the Jacob deGrom effect, I think.
I know. Imagine being a Mets fan. That's your whole season.
It's just been a small stretch, but what do you make of that? What was the other one? He did it against the Cubs, and it was the Braves when the bullpen blew it late.
Right. Well, I mean, he kind of went through a mini blip there about a month ago where he was still good, but he wasn't his normal excellent. So it's good to get him back on his Cy Young type track, even if he might not win it this year with DeGrom pitching so well. I mean, just predicting this game, I don't know if we're doing that now or if I'm jumping ahead, but I'm not picking Dan Straley over Max Scherzer, so I'll go with the Nats in this game. I mean, Straley, not good this year. Has actually been decent against the Nationals. 3.8 ERA in his two starts against Washington, though the Nats did win both games. So maybe he's got a little magic against the Nats, but even if he gives up 3 runs, I think that's more than enough for Scherzer.
Yeah, I think the last podcast I did before the Cubs series was actually the closest I've ever come to picking against Max Scherzer when he was going up against Cole Hamels. That's the last we'll say of that game. But yeah, Dan Straley, like you say, done quite well. But Matt Wieters is hitting .600 against him in his career. So he's got a nice opportunity.
How many at-bats?
Off the top of my head, 12, maybe?
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, hey, let's get into the lineup.
Looked at 600. I don't think you can pick against Scherzer in that one. You rarely can as an Nats fan, I don't think.
No, it's just safe to always ride the Scherzer train, I think. Makes you feel better.
So second up, we got Tommy Malone against Wei Yin Chen on Saturday at 7:05 PM. Tommy Malone 1-1 with a 5.24 ERA. Wei Yin Chen 4-9 with a 5.23 ERA. Feels like a run fest.
Knowing baseball, though, it'll be like a 2-1 extra inning affair. So, I mean, Malone, his last couple outings, I guess he gave up 7 runs in one of them, but just getting knocked around, like 20 hits in about 10 innings. His first two starts, which were against Miami and the Mets, who are basically two like AAA lineups, he fared okay. So maybe, I mean, he's only walked one guy. So going back against Miami, which maybe gets through 5 innings, 1 run or something like that, just generates a bunch of weak contact. I mean, I don't know. This game is, I guess I'll pick like Malone and the Nats, but I don't know. These are two starters who I don't want to put any money on.
You sure you just put money on the over?
I will do that.
Yeah, Malone, I think Malone's given up 10 hits twice in a row, maybe.
Yeah, yep. Both outings for 10 hits.
Yeah, it's he's been a bit hit to death and he's stranded the bases loaded quite a few times somehow. So it feels like some of the blow ups coming.
He's got a 5.2 ERA and it feels like it could be a lot worse. But against Miami, this could be a they don't really have anyone besides Real Muto who really can threaten the opposing pitcher. So,
He gave up 3 Chen, runs in the first inning against them and then 4 scoreless. So,
yeah. Chen pitched well against the Nats in his first outing against them in May, 1 run in 7 1/3, and then got bombed on in the second outing. I don't know. I'm just going to ride with the Nats because the Nats have killed the Marlins for the last 2 years, but I have no other knowledge other than that.
Yeah, I was going to go for the Marlins, but then I looked at Wei Yin Chen's splits. And in 9 road starts this year, he's got a 10.27 ERA compared to 2.05 at home. And that might be the cavernous Marlins Park into it a bit. But that's not pretty, and I think that gives me enough grounds to pick the Nats.
Yeah, I think you should definitely go Nats after hearing that. I'm all in on the Nats after hearing a 10-plus ERA.
9 starts as well. It's not a tiny sample.
No, it is not.
So finally, on Sunday at 1:35 p.m., we've got Gio Gonzalez against Pablo Lopez. Gio Gonzalez 7-9 with a 4.12 ERA. Pablo Lopez 2-3 with a 4.79 ERA. And we do get Max Scherzer on Friday, but we're not exactly blessed with great starting pitching in this this series.
Yeah, but luckily neither are the Marlins. So, I mean, Gio, even if he's off, still has a chance to beat Pablo Lopez. Lopez has already faced the Nats once this year, 5 runs in 5 innings. He's got 8 starts this year, 4 of them where he's given up 2 runs or less. The other 4 where he's given up either 4 or 5 runs. So he's kind of been alternating gems and clunkers this season. We got 1 clunker against the Nats already. Hope that doesn't mean a gem is coming. As for Gio, his control has been a real problem last 2 months, month and a half. So, and he's not striking guys out. I don't know how to fix him because he's kind of been so spotty throughout his career. But have you seen anything with Gio that's really stuck out to you in the last couple outings?
Yeah, it's been the walks that have killed him, and kind of like we were mentioning with Malone, it's been the hit for Gio. It's been the walks, and he's had the escape, plenty of jams, which we've seen throughout his career. But when the walks are piling up, he's not helping himself. And I think he's been not finishing his pitches. He's left some curveballs up and not getting them down in the dirt. I was actually looking at one of the heat maps to try and figure it out. And early on in his career, he was burying that curveball and obviously was getting a lot of bite on it. Now, just kind of hanging there.
Yeah, it kind of floats out there. When he's trying to throw it to righties a lot, he gets it like, if he doesn't have any bite, it just stays out in like the left-hand batter's box and the catcher's flailing to catch it. And if it has a little bite, it's just diving right into the middle of the zone. And the guy's swinging at it, it usually ends up hard contact.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that helped him before was the fact that it was so deceptive and it would actually get swings and misses. But now people seem to be reading it a lot better and staying off. And that kind of leads to the walks if people aren't swinging at that, getting balls from it.
Right. I mean, last 9 starts, only 44 1/3 innings pitched, got 29 walks, only 33 strikeouts. So he's not even, he hasn't been a K guy really in a couple of years, but he's not getting the strikeouts to really help solve the problem when you're putting so many free passes and just guys on base without any base knocks.
So how do you see this one going?
I've already given the Nats 2. Pablo Lopez, I'm not sure if he's a real person or not. I mean, hey, we've seen a couple decent Gio outings. God damn it, let's go with the Nats for the sweep. Why not? They just lost 4 in a row before tonight. Let's give them 3 wins in a row.
You're shaking your head, regretting it immediately. But we've probably talked about it enough. He seems to always come up against the Marlins, and 10-3 with a 1.89 career ERA against the Marlins in 18 starts. It's not the same Gio as it was early in his career. He's actually better at home against the Marlins than he is on the road. So who knows? If he's going to put it together against anyone, it's going to be the Marlins.
Oh, there we go. Are you picking Gio in the Nats?
Maybe.
Yeah, see, picking this series with these pitching matchups outside of game one, it's a really, you have no idea.
No, I think I've been far too optimistic over the course of the season and predicted too many series wins when I probably shouldn't have. And I think I'm going to stay optimistic and go with the Nats. I think the offense has been on the whole consistent enough that they can probably make up for even a subpar Gio start in this one.
If it makes you feel any better, I think this is my 4th time on the podcast. I probably picked the Nats in like 11 of the 13 games or something like that. So yeah, I'm putting them on like 150 win pace.
Yeah, I think you picked 2 sweeps. The other one was against the Padres.
Yeah, I did go against the Padres. They did not sweep.
So I want to say thanks to Brian for joining me today. And where can our listeners find you?
Twitter at Brian D. Foley, and then on District on Deck website. So getting some stuff out this week.
Yeah, remember to check out some of our content this week. As we talked about earlier, Brian put up a piece about the Nats pitchers development. And I also analyzed Matt Wheat's swing, funnily enough, gone through both on the podcast. Remember to follow us on Twitter at District on Deck. Give us a like on Facebook, District on Deck. Remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spreaker, and Stitcher where you can get episodes downloaded automatically. Podcast will be back over the weekend as we look ahead to a divisional matchup against the Phillies, albeit it might be a little too late. But we'll see you then.